Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash? Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro potting soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Elizabeth Dutton.
Zarin Burnett.
You know what's ridiculous?
Yeah, you know what's ridiculous? Child beauty pageants.
Oh, wow.
I know it's been done to death, but I found myself saying to my dog today, cupcake hands from Toddlers and Tiaras. I'm so mad at myself. Hands?
I don't even know what
like
that is.
Like when the little... all done up kids put their hand down with their palms flat.
Okay. In the air or like on
no,
an
like
object?
No, like their arms straight down, palms flat, parallel with the floor.
Oh, is this to like lengthen and strengthen or something?
I don't know. And I don't know why it's cupcake hands, but like, I don't even know why I said it to the dog, but I said it. And then I was like mad at myself for referencing it. I used to watch Toddlers and Tiaras as like a train wreck, but I don't know. I just started thinking about how it's ridiculous because it's like allowed to happen. And you have these moms that are either recapturing or like capturing for the first time validation based on their notion of like attractiveness through the surrogacy of their child.
You find this ridiculous.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Should be abolished. I know. And again, it's been done to death, but whatever.
Do you have strong feelings about like dog beauty pageants?
Like dog shows?
Well, I'm assuming they have also, I would just call this dog beauty pageants.
I wish they would have best in show. Yeah,
and
but
have,
I wish
like,
they
cutest
were.
Dog.
They should have another dog show that's all like house blend dogs, like my dog.
Yes, I would totally agree.
Where
I would,
it's like, I don't know what breed he is.
Yeah, just all
cute,
a bunch of mutts. Yeah.
A cute terrier. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to have to start that.
Okay, well, that is definitely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a story for you that's pretty darn ridiculous.
Better than child beauty pageants and cute dogs?
Let's not compare. It's about a private investigator. You love those.
I do.
I love those.
I want to be a private investigator.
This one is interesting because he's also a con artist and a swindler, an alleged murderer. We won't get into that, but he's also a self-described friend of Al Capone. He's a man who was an insider in the Harding White House. That was like early 20th century. And then also, you know, he was a multiple felon who was, you know, the kind of guy who's naturally going to insert himself into the crime of the century when it rolls around.
Right.
And, you know, he did that because he said, hey, I can help save that kidnapped Lindbergh baby. Meanwhile, he really had his eye on the pocketbook of the eccentric heiress who owned the Hope Diamond, who was keen to have that baby be saved.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot. That was a mouthful.
Thank you. And this guy is like, I think J. Edgar Hoover called him the most amazing figure in contemporary criminal history.
That's a lot coming from J. Eddie's.
Yeah, dude, the guy's like a 20th century Mad Lib. I mean, like, he had every little thing crossed and boxed.
Right.
His mama named him Gaston Means.
That's an amazing name.
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous. Elizabeth.
Zarin.
Our story begins today with the man Gaston Means just getting out of prison.
Oh, that's cute.
Right? He got his freedom again. We all love that.
I do.
Yeah, and he was sent there because he had betrayed the president of the United States.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a big baller, you know? He's like a shot caller.
He's so like, he's not, like, doing a dime for running unstamped cigarettes.
No.
He's betraying the president of the United...
Yeah.
That's like a very Nicolas Cage level.
Right? I'm going to betray the president of the United States.
And betray... Was it a felony of betraying the president?
No, I mean, that's not technically like
the
charge
he got.
He
wasn't on that charge.
Yeah, no, but that's what he says. He's like, you know, this was the mistake I did, and that's why I had to go to prison.
Okay.
We'll get into that.
Thank you.
Dude's a Southerner by birth, right? Raised in North Carolina, grew up on a plantation, family's well-situated, father's a lawyer. He grows up to become a school teacher and then a salesman, and eventually decides, you know what? I'm really good at being a con man. So he settles on that as
found
his career.
His calling.
He just then decides to become a private detective. Because who better to commit crimes than somebody who's ostensibly solving crimes?
Like firefighters who start fires.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this worked so well that he ends up becoming a detective that's a professional detective, and then he gets hired by the FBI.
Wow.
Meanwhile, the whole time he's a con man. At no point does he give that up. He's just like a con man with a badge.
Right on.
So this dude is, I got to make this clear. I'm not a fan of Gaston Means. He's not like a folk hero like some of these guys who you'll hear me talk about where it's like, clearly I got a soft spot for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not so with Gaston Means.
Okay.
But I got to say, I admire his criminal bravura. The guy goes right to the top and he's like, oh yeah, man, I got this. Like, so, that I find is absolutely amazing. I mean, well, we'll get into it. That this guy, his one of his favorite things to do is to always like, you know, he'll do a crime and then he's like, oh, right when he gets caught, he's like, oh, by the way, this is not what you think. I'm not just not the criminal, but I have an explanation. I've got these papers. They're not here. They're back in my friend's house. Let me go get them. They'll totally explain. At one point, he has a trunk sent to Washington, D.C. to prove that he has not done a crime, mm-hmm. but he has the trunk sealed. And he says to the army, hey, if you guys will give me like a letter saying I'm a good guy that gets me out of this like, you know, near prison sentence I'm facing back home, that'd be a solid. So I'm going to send a trunk with the secret paperwork that'll prove that I didn't do this crime. And then they're like, okay. He sends that to Washington, D.C. on the train. Meanwhile, he races to Washington, D.C. on his own and then goes, can I get that piece of paperwork? And then they're like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, the trunk just arrived. And they're like, okay. He gets the trunk. They're like, they open it up later on. It's totally empty. The dude just absolutely loves taking paperwork that doesn't exist and explaining himself away. Now, this will stay, as we say, a theme for this guy's career.
Okay.
And just know that it'll eventually fold in over and over again.
Yeah.
But here, I got another real quick example I just got to lay on you about kind of like, remember I said he got out of prison?
Yeah.
For betraying the president?
Uh-huh.
Well, what I mean by that is he had been involved in the Harding White House, right? And that got him in touch with the head of the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, Harry M. Dougherty, right? So Harry M. Dougherty knows that this guy, Gaston Means, is part of the FBI. And Gaston Means is super dirty. He's like, you know, selling basically licenses for bootlegging. He's doing a bunch of stuff through the FBI that he should not be doing, right?
And so is he like a freelancer with the FBI? He's not an FBI agent.
Oh, no, he's 100% FBI agent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. And now Gaston Means, when he gets in trouble, like basically when Daugherty decides to go after him personally. So then he waits for Daugherty to no longer be the attorney general. And then he comes forward and he goes, actually, that guy's dirty. And they're like, what? And the Congress is like, he's like, yeah, I got paperwork, secret paperwork to prove it. They're like, oh, okay. Come before the congressional hearing that we'll hold. So Gaston means he's like telling the Congress about how dirty Daugherty is. Like, this dude's like basically a cup
dirty
of sewer
Daugherty.
Water. Yeah, exactly. He's like, no, like, seriously, I know he was the attorney general, but he's the problem. Trust me, I'm a detective. I'm an FBI agent. I know I am the keeper of secrets. And they're like, okay. So they're like, okay, well, what documentation do you have? He's like, okay, I'll be right back. Let me go get my paperwork, right? And the Congress is like, okay, go do it, Gaston. Gaston goes home, and when he gets home, the paperwork is gone. But of course, it's not really gone because there was never any paperwork. But when he gets back to Congress, he's like, yeah, guys, there was these other people from the Congressional Committee, the head of the Congressional Committee, he sent the people to gather the paperwork, and they gave me this order of seizure, and that's all I have. Now, the head of the Congressional Committee is sitting there. He's like, bruh, I did what?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you sent this order. He's like, well, let me see the paperwork. And he's like, this is not my signature. This is a total forgery. Gaston Means is like tipping over a pitcher of water. Forgery, forgery. I've been tricked by my enemies. I'll run them down if it's the last thing I ever do. They're like, are you for real right now? He's like, yeah, I'll be right back.
He's always going to be right back.
They're like, nah, bro. This isn't like Georgia. This isn't going to play. They're like, look, bro, you're up on perjury charges. The Congressional Committee puts him up on perjury charges. He ends up having to do 2 years. He gets convicted. That's my bad in Gaston Means. Like, he's basically constantly trying to just run shop on everybody. And sometimes it works. Now, he had been inside the halls of power. He was real tight with Warren Harding's wife, First Lady Florence Harding. Yeah. Now, you have to understand about First Lady Florence Harding. She has her own little mystery. She was long rumored to have conspired to kill the president with the help of his doctor.
Ooh la la.
Yeah, exactly. Gaston Means writes a book about it. He's like, yeah, let me tell you, I remember I'm the keeper of secrets. He's like, so he writes a book and it's titled The Strange Death of President Harding.
Now, so it's like a tell-all?
Oh, completely. Yeah. Like, and in the book, he's like, Flo Hard, if you're nasty, is like a avid, like, I don't know, purveyor of all things mystical and spiritual and supernatural. And she has a fortune teller named Madame X, who tells her, like, you know, look, Flo Hard, you are a special spiritual being. You've been chosen to be in this place. You are a, quote, child of destiny. So, of course, she gobbles this up.
Well, yeah.
Right? And she's got Gaston Means going, oh, yeah, yeah, it's totally true, Flo Hard. You are definitely a child of destiny. So she decides, you know, to act on that. What that means is keeping people away from the president, keeping people close to the president. She starts managing Harding's inner circle.
And so she just Nancy Reagans it.
Yeah, exactly. Completely. And everybody catches on to this. They're like, well, what's up with homegirl, right? She's basically trying to, like, secret run the presidency.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in 1923, they're on a trip out west. They're in San Francisco, and lo and behold, President Harding drops dead. The only person in the room at the time is Flo Hard.
Aww.
She's hanging out. Yeah, well, it's not terribly bad.
Well, I mean, like, her husband keels over and dies.
Yeah, that happens. You know,
that happens,
but he was a president.
I'm allowed to say, aw.
No, no, exactly. I mean, but it's an interesting wrinkle.
Don't let me not say, aw.
You can totally say, aw. I like that you say, aw.
Thank you.
So I'll give you a little example of the evening. It's August 2nd. It's 1923. They're in San Francisco. They're staying at the Palace Hotel in, suitably, the presidential suite.
Right.
Flo Hard is reading aloud to the president. It's a Saturday Evening Post article about him. And he's like, oh, that's good. Go on. And then he just kind of starts shimmying and shaking and slumps over. And like an old Mercedes Benz has kind of like just been shut off. He just kind of lays there shaking for a while and then stops.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. So he's 58 years old and he's now dead in San Francisco. This may sound crazy.
Who among us hasn't been
dead at least once in
San
Francisco?
I've been 58 and dead in San Francisco, like what, six, seven times?
Isn't that
times?
The title of your memoir? 58 and dead in San Francisco?
Well, I mean, I was going to unveil that later this week, but thanks for blowing that.
I am so, so sorry.
Yeah.
So in 1923, did you know the average American male's life expectancy was 56 years old?
Wow.
Yeah. Dude surpassed it by 2 years.
Well, there.
See, that's why I was like,
hurrah.
You know. So Gaston Means and Flohard come up with a plan, right? Because she confesses to him. She's like, look, I killed the president and I did it with the doctor. This is, of course, according to Gaston Means.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Did he have the paperwork on that?
Exactly. Well, he put it in his book. He's like, let me go be right back.
She
let me go grab
it,
my book.
She wrote it in crystals on this parchment paper.
Well, he's like, no, he's like, she's like bitter and calculating, determined woman. That's a direct quote for how he described her. So he's like basically trying to shift the blame. I wouldn't be surprised if he was involved, but whatever. Yeah. So Gaston Means, like, in his book, he's pretty much painting this portrait of, like, intrigue all around the Harding White House, and he's putting most of it on Flohard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he ascribes to her this quote from his book, and you love this.
Oh, hit me a quote.
You know how in every way and at all times in trying to protect my husband, I ran into a solid wall of opposition. Every way I turned, I was balked and laughed at. Warren Harding died in honor as Madame X said he would. Had he lived 24 hours longer, he might have been impeached. Nothing could stem the torrents that were pouring down on us. I have not betrayed my country or the party that my husband loved so much. They are saved. I have no regrets. I have fulfilled my destiny. So you kind of get the idea of like where Flohard is with her story, right?
Sure.
So she's like aggrandizing herself. But meanwhile, she won't allow anyone to do an autopsy on the president.
Oh.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So this, of course, causes there to be more whispers that a crime is being covered up. And this is what Gaston Means uses to fan the flames of book sales.
Did she want to do a home magical autopsy?
No, she just wanted to basically
like extracts.
She's like, no, it's really important not to desecrate the body. And everyone's like, wait, what? And
look, so, over there, the yeah. Gaston Means story.
The Gaston Means, exactly. So Gaston Means, he claims in his book that he helps her and ends up being basically the scapegoat for the sins and corruption of the Harding administration, because everybody shifts all this mystery and intrigue onto his shoulders. Mm-hmm. Ends up doing 4 years in the federal penitentiary in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he gets out of federal prison in 1928. Just in time to insinuate himself into the most famous criminal case of the 20th century, the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby.
Oh.
Right?
Perfect timing.
You remember the Lindbergh baby kidnapping?
I did it.
When did you first hear about it?
When I did it.
When you did it? Do you remember? Like?
No, I don't remember the day I found out about the Lindbergh.
No, but I mean, like, do you remember like how you found out? For me, it was the murder on the Orient Express. I remember It was like my mother explaining to me why Lindbergh. I'd never heard about it. I knew who Lindbergh was, but yeah. I'd never heard about the baby. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I don't recall. I suppose I was reading something at a tender age mm-hmm. and stumbled across it. And then later, I learned more about it reading a profiler's book about FBI cases that hadn't ever, well, I don't know, they'd been solved, or he didn't think they'd been solved correctly. I don't know. You know, my memory is fuzzy. Came up there and I learned all the stuff.
Was it on like 15 Trivial Pursuit clues?
Oh, you know what?
Producer Dave, yeah, on the spot with that. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, my family hated me for a lot of reasons, but one of them is that anytime I stayed home sick from school, I used to just read Trivial Pursuit cards and like try and guess the answers. But then the byproduct is that I memorized Trivial Pursuit cards.
So then nobody would play the game.
Yeah.
Oh, the irony.
I know.
So the Lindbergh baby is like a major crime, and it's also the reason why kidnapping became a federal crime for the FBI to prosecute.
Hmm.
Yeah. So we'll be right back after this quick break, and I'll tell you all about Gaston Means, the Lindbergh baby kidnapping, and how this all ties together in a very strange bow.
I love it. Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply. As you know, the world can be a dangerous and unpredictable place. With every crime I've studied, I've learned one thing. Your best line of defense is your vigilance and preparation. You don't want to worry. You just want peace of mind. That's why I recommend SimpliSafe Home Security. For every ridiculous robbery and theft we talk about, it's pretty obvious the crimes could be avoided with a solid security system. A good home security system keeps people prepared and aware. SimpliSafe is that system. It was named Best Home Security Systems 2024 by U.S. News and World Report. And it doesn't just protect your home from crime. It also alerts you to fire, floods, and other emergencies. They offer sensors and cameras backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. There are no contracts, and there's a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Okay, so we have Charles Lindbergh and the Lindbergh baby kidnapping and my man Gaston Means. Now, Charles Lindbergh, I don't know if modern audiences recognize how famous Charles Lindbergh was.
Massively.
Right? The dude's known as Lucky Lindy. He starts off as a post office pilot and then becomes instantly world famous after he flies across the Atlantic from New York to Paris all by himself in his plane, the Spirit of St. Louis.
Because people didn't do that. People didn't fly across the Atlantic.
He was the first person to ever fly across the Atlantic. It was like a super long measure of how far could a plane go. They didn't think anybody could do it. He basically is equivalent to the Wright brothers in terms of enlarging the imagination of what can be done with a plane.
And pantsless.
And he did it also pantsless, which is a little known fact.
Milestone.
And it's really cold up there.
Well, you have to have it lighter. You have to, any way you can lighten the load. In a plane, take your pants off.
Take your pants off. We're losing ounces here. This is important. That's like an extra 3 miles.
Well, and it's just you're faster. It's like how swimmers shave their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Pilots usually fly without pants.
That's an industry
secret.
It's just
wind resistance.
Yeah, that's why they won't let people into the cabin anymore.
That's why they won't let me on planes.
That's one of the reasons.
Okay, go ahead.
So the Lindbergh baby, as I told you, is why kidnapping becomes a federal crime. It's also basically at the beginning of the FBI being what we think of as the FBI. Before that, most states did all of their stuff on their own.
And
the FBI had very limited, it was pretty much only able to prosecute people in Washington, D.C. It was like kind of like a, and then along comes the Lindbergh baby and, of course, bootlegging and a bunch of other stuff that expands their powers. But kidnapping was not a federal crime. So the Lindbergh baby gets, you know, taken and snatched, taken across state lines. All of a sudden, people like, well, specifically J. Edgar Hoover's like, oh, I got a chance to get some power, right? So Gaston Means is the same kind of person, but he looked at the Lindbergh baby in a much different way. Rather than like, oh, hey, I'll gain power, he's like, I'll gain money.
Yeah, well,
because, you know, that's his thing. So, okay.
Gaston's gonna Gaston.
Just to lay out the crime of the century, aka the Lindbergh baby kidnapping, I want you to picture it.
I was there, so this will be easy.
Okay. It's the evening of March 1st, 1932.
Mm-hmm.
The Lindbergh home is in a secluded spot in a hilly section of rural New Jersey. It's about 5 miles northeast of Princeton, about 20 miles north of Trenton, if you know the area.
No.
It's rural country. Think of woods, trees.
Pine barrens?
Kind of. Let's go with pine barrens from The Sopranos. Just picture that without the snow. Now, there's a two-story white stone house is at the end of this road. It's like a winding dirt road. Obviously, they don't have like paved roads. So, you know, it's 1932. So
they have paved roads.
No, but I mean, not to like out to a house in the country. You know, they're like, why? You know,
point taken.
All right. So it's a quiet, rainy night. There's not many people out venturing because it's rural and it's raining, right?
Yeah.
Inside the Lindbergh home, there's the golden-haired child, the spitting image of his famous father, Lucky Lindy. He's just 20 months old. Or in adult terms, it's like a year, 8 months, right? So he's lying in his crib, alone in his room, in the corner of the second floor of this big stone house.
Smoking a cigarette.
Listening.
Everyone smoked then.
Yeah, totally.
Kids, babies.
Listening to some Irving Berlin. Then all of a sudden, the baby's gone.
Magic.
So the baby's nurse comes in to check on him around 10 p.m. And she's like, oh, little Lindy. And then the baby's gone. The window is open. And on the windowsill is a ransom note demanding 50 grand for the return of the baby.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. The nurse screams and runs from the house. And she runs down. The baby is taken. Someone's taken the baby. Right? Now, this window is 30 feet straight up from the ground.
Uh-huh.
And there's nothing there. So people are like, how did the ransom note get there? So immediately they start assuming that the nurse is involved. People don't know what's going on, right? But the mystery is very quickly solved when the police arrive and they find a ladder.
Hello.
About 100 feet from the house, right?
So like, how in tarnation
how
to take
this
it up
possibly?
There? Well, I mean, like, if I had that ladder over there, I'd use that, but it's not currently leaning against the building, so it must have been Superman.
Yeah, I don't know who did it. That baby must have jumped. So
blame the nurse.
They start checking the woods. Remember, there's like dense, dark woods around. And because there's also a landing strip because Lindbergh has like his own landing strip.
Well, yeah.
So they're like, maybe the baby flew away. I mean, like in a plane, you know, not just like flap, flap. But so they
and
start...
that baby grew up to be D.B. Cooper.
So the police keep investigating. They find no fingerprints, no blood stains, no signs of violence, no signs of forced entry, and just the ransom note, right? We'll put the picture of this ransom note up on the Ridiculous Crime Instagram so you can check it because you have to see the handwriting. It is like doctor scrawl bad.
Wow. Okay.
Right? Okay. So the only clue that they have to go on is a pair of footprints that are in the mud. But the footprints have no like sole imprint because the people who took the baby took their shoes off. So they just have these basic literal footprints in the mud.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the police follow the footprints and they go and they lead off to this rutted country road. And they assume there must have been a car there waiting for some speedy escape, right? So now they have kind of basically figured out the baby is gone. Headlines break. The world's like, what? The most... Also, you have to keep in mind, when this baby was born, headlines went around the world just about Lindbergh having a baby. So now, little less than 2 years later, those same headlines chase around the world going, the Lindbergh baby is stolen.
Oh, and that's just like hot headline material.
Oh,
right,
completely.
There.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's like the fair-haired son, the most famous person in the world.
We love a trauma and a disaster.
Yeah, we love a stolen baby. Let's be real.
God, who doesn't love a stolen baby?
So
I could use a stolen baby
right now.
So I'm so sorry.
It's okay. The Lindberghs are like American royalty, so people are treating it like the Queen of England's kid's been taken, right? So enter Gaston Means. He's like, oh, I can make some hay with this, right? So he's been out of jail for a couple years, and he's like, let me see. How can I make this Lindbergh baby thing pay for me? So he keeps his ear to the ground, and he figures out that there is a perfect mark in all of the situation. Her name is Evelyn Walsh McLean.
Hmm.
He had met her like when he was basically in the Harding administration. She'd been in the periphery, so he knew who she was. She was the estranged wife of Edward B. McLean, whose family owned the Washington Post.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But she wasn't just like an also-ran who came in and married wealthy. She had her own money. Her father was an Irishman who went to West and struck it big and gold and Colorado, the Colorado Gold Rush. So she had her own money. So she's basically raised to be eccentric and weird in any which way she wants because, you know, she's this fabulously wealthy
God
heir,
bless it.
Right?
Yeah, wealthy people can be as weird as they want.
Now, to give you a sense of how wealthy she is, she owned the Hope Diamond.
Okay, that is, yeah, that's serious money.
Yeah, right?
Isn't now, that thing cursed?
Oh, we'll get into that okay. In 1 second. Yeah, because there's like I want to give it its own space. The Hope Diamond is something that like, yeah, it's a fun little rock.
Okay.
So, okay, in 1932, Evelyn McLean had become friends with the Lindbergh family, right? Because Lindbergh had become wealthy, so now he's traveling in these circles, and mm-hmm. she's like, oh, this is fabulous, because he's an attractive guy, and he's like, you know, daring and brave, and everybody loves him. So she, of course, sets her sight on him. Now, she had something in common, though, with the Lindberghs. When she... Pantslessness. Total devotion to pantslessness. When she was a... When she was pregnant, she gives birth to a son. Her son's name is Vincent, and Vincent was known as the $100 million baby.
Oh.
That's what the press called him. When he was born, the headline said, $100 million baby born. And the reason why it's called the $100 million baby is because that was the value of the combined wealth of these families.
Right.
So it'd be like if Elon Musk had married someone really wealthy and they had a baby.
And
it'd be
he
like,
was born oddly enough, wearing a top hat and a monocle.
He was also born pantsless.
And pantsless. Yeah, unlike the, most of the population. Yeah, he came out pantsless, but wearing a top hat and a monocle.
And a monocle. Mm-hmm. Looking like he was ready to sell you peanuts or a board game.
Or so, both.
In 1909, the kid's born, right? 2 years later, Evelyn McLean buys the Hope Diamond. Now, these two things intertwine into a really bizarre story. As you pointed out, the Hope Diamond is cursed, right? She had purchased it from Cartier for $180,000 in 1911, right? Mm-hmm. Now, $180,000 in today's money is about $5.2 million.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a big rock.
Yeah.
Now, this rock had been all around royalty. It had been owned, it was called French Blue because it had been owned by the French monarchy, had been owned by the English monarchy. And she liked to just like basically brag on the fact that she had this like aristocratic rock. So she would just wear it anywhere, like literally anywhere. So the story she'd been told, she included in her biography, like her autobiography. And you love this. Mm-hmm. I quote.
I love when you quote things.
As we all stared at that diamond, Monsieur Cartier began to tell us things he did not vouch for, that Tavernier had stolen the gem from a Hindu idol and was cursed and torn apart by savage beasts. Since then, the diamond had brought bad luck to anyone who wore or even touched it. Louis XIV died a horrible death from gangrene, and we all know about the knife blade that sliced through Marie Antoinette's throat. Lord Hope's grandnephew and heir to the diamond had plenty of troubles. His wife eloped with handsome Captain Strong. Now, maybe that was not bad luck, but it was embarrassing. Monsieur Cartier was most entertaining. So that diamond,
I think,
right?
It's less of a curse than like, if you have that kind of money, you're going to do something terrible. And
yeah, exactly. Other people may come after you.
Right. And then I love that Lord Hope's grandnephew, the wife elopes with someone named Captain Strong.
Yeah, totally.
This is like a kid's handsome dumb Captain comic Strong. Book. Like, Lord Hope, Lady Hope runs off with Captain Strong.
What six-year-old wrote all this?
Right?
Okay, so this, as I said, basically the British monarchy owned it, the French monarchy owned it, everybody had it, it was a cursed object, it went traveling through like Lord Hope, then Cartier gets it, eventually sells it to her, she then has it, and, you know, right after the press is all excited about her $100 million baby, right? Mm-hmm. So she's fabulously wealthy. Now, the only thing she's concerned about in her personal life isn't this diamond and its curse, but anything that might possibly happen to her child, right? So she's like basically willing to pay for security, and she's always worried that someone's going to steal the baby and ransom it, which is kind of like, you know, what sets her up for people at Gaston Means to, mm-hmm. you know, her fear makes her an easy mark, right?
Yeah.
So to kind of tie together the Hope Diamond and Vincent McLean's life, mm-hmm. the Washington Post documented, which is interesting because it's his family's paper, documented the sad fate of what happened to Vincent McLean. And I quote, "The baby, Vincent, was carrying the diamond in his pocket on the day he evades his keepers, ran into the street, and was killed by a passing car. Diamond was unharmed. His mother, returning from the Kentucky Derby, related that, quote, my father, dead 9 years, suddenly appeared and said, Vincent is dead."
So the kid puts the Hope Diamond
in his pocket.
Pocket.
Yep, and runs out into traffic and gets bumped.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So,
and I love that they're like, oh, by the way, the diamond was unharmed.
Yeah, exactly.
For those of you more concerned.
Those of you who are worried about the rock.
No worries, dude.
Nothing happened. So that whole time she'd been worried about something bad happening to him being kidnapped, and eventually he just gets, you know, ruined by the curse of their wealth, right?
Yeah, again.
So she, of course, immediately feels for the Lindberghs when they lose their child. So she says, I will use my wealth to do what I couldn't do for my child. So she promises them basically all the complete use of her wealth to secure their lost child.
Sure.
And this is something that Gaston Means hears about.
Yeah, she couldn't save her child, so she's going to...
Yes, exactly.
That poor woman.
And so she's like letting this out in the Washington, D.C. community, so the rich are whispering about it, like, well, you know, Lady McLean has said that she will do da-da-da, and so Gaston Means like, what? Oh! So on March 4th, 3 days after the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby, Gaston Means shows up at Evelyn McLean's house, and he's like, hey, Evelyn, you remember me, right? Gaston, you know you're worried about that Lindbergh baby? You know what? It's crazy. I know this may sound crazy, but I can find the kid. She's like, what? 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 Tell me more. And he's like, yeah. See, I used to be in prison, right? And she's like, yes. And he's like, it's a long story. But when I was in prison, I had this cellmate. And the cellmate, he talked a lot. And I'm fairly certain he took the kid. And I'm like, what? Why would you think that? He's like, nope, just trust me. I can get in touch with the kidnappers.
I like that he's like, I'm a lawman, but in my time in prison.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like, I got inside information. So she's like, okay, well, what do we do? He's like, we need your money. She's like, okay, well, just tell me more. And so Gaston's like, okay, here's the deal. I know where the kidnappers are. We'll go down there. We'll give them the money. They'll give us back their baby. She's like, could it be that simple? He's like, yeah, it's fine. I let me go contact him. So he contacts the kidnappers, and I put that in air quotes. And then he goes back to her and he goes, I've arranged a plan with the kidnappers. And she's like, really? He's like, yeah. Here's what it'll take, $100,000, and I can pay them off, and they'll give me back the baby. She's like, okay. So she goes out, and she goes to raise the money. She takes out a loan, and she gets, like, the short-term loan, and she basically hops one of her real estate, or a bunch of her real estate properties.
This $100 million lady has to take out a loan?
She's not liquid, you know? She's got to, like, it's $100,000. It's still a lot of cash. So she's like, let me take out a money loan. I know. I don't know how the rich do it.
I don't know either.
So she brings $100,000 to Gaston. Gaston's like, perfect. Oh, by the way, I'm going to need more. She's like, what? She's like, yeah, I need like, you know, $4,000 traveling money, you know, expenses. Just, yeah, you know, things come
mad
up.
Mad money, little pocket kid.
I'm going to be on a train. Come on.
He wants a petty cash box.
She's like, okay, well, that's fine here. So she does
I'm going to be on a train.
Well, you know, there's like sandwiches and stuff.
I like a good sandwich whenever I'm writing.
She's like, okay, that's fine. Here's the $4,000, which she does happen to have because, you know, she can keep that cash.
Right.
So she's able to give him that. And she's like, okay, I'm going down to Aiken, South Carolina.
Oh.
So Aiken is like, you know, it's not a small town, but back then it probably was a small town. So he goes down and he says, hey, I happen to have a small cottage in Aiken, so we'll stay there.
That's convenient. Yeah. They want to meet us in Aiken. Oh, wait, I have a cottage there.
Yeah, it just works out. Don't worry. He's like, we'll meet the kidnappers there. They'll hand us back the Lindbergh baby. She's like, okay, that sounds great. So they then travel down to Aiken, desirous to go save the Lindbergh baby.
Evelyn's not the brightest bulb, right?
Well, she's eccentric.
Okay.
We'll just say eccentric, right?
All right. So like eccentric, like wearing a big fur coat 24/7 and like coral lipstick that's kind of smeared on her face and on her teeth. Eccentric.
Exactly. Lipstick on the teeth, eccentric.
The smell of mothballs surrounds her.
Mm-hmm. And like one of those gin pickled fingers.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Mental picture established.
Bing. So they're down in Aiken, South Carolina, and, you know, there's not much to do. So every day she's like, have you heard from the kidnappers? And he's like, yeah, I'm supposed to. Or I'm supposed to get a drop or a letter or a note. She's like, oh, okay. And then the next day he's like, yep, didn't hear anything. We didn't meet up. She's like, but I thought you were supposed to meet. Oh, yeah, no. Tomorrow. It's going to be tomorrow. They're like, okay. So he keeps doing that. Every day she's like, did you hear from them? Tomorrow, right? She's like, okay. So eventually he's like, look, I got to level with you. The kidnappers are scared. They think they're going to get busted. She's like, wait, what? He's like, no. Okay, look, it's the weather. They don't want to come out because it's raining. They don't want to get a cold. She's like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, trust me. They'll be there. Eventually she gets tired of this. She's like, look, after a week of this, she's like, I need an update. Is the child okay? He cannot be doing well. I don't think these kidnappers can take care of a baby. She's like, you know, panicking, still thinking about her own child.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. The baby's fine. It's no problem. They took the baby to warm weather. It's out in El Paso.
Did he have a little cottage in El Paso too?
No, actually he did not. So he's like, look, yeah, the Lindbergh baby is in El Paso. So we just got to go there now. She's like, wait, why did they leave Aiken and go to El Paso?
At the border.
And then he's like, yeah, well, actually, no, they're in Mexico, but we're going to meet them in El Paso. They were so afraid. They fled the country.
They took the baby to see it at Juarez.
Exactly. They're like, you know,
good.
It's a hopping spot.
Good job, guys.
So she's like, okay, well, let's go to El Paso. So then they take the train west out to El Paso. And meanwhile, Gaston Means is like telling her stories like, have you ever heard about the Harding administration? You know, I was friends with the first lady. I could tell you some stories. So they take the long train ride out there. And a month has passed and mid-April's rolled around and Evelyn McLean is starting to recognize the obvious that she's been conned by Gaston Means.
Oh.
Every day she's waiting on word. Nothing ever comes. She's like, wait a minute. This dude is lied to me.
Aww.
Right? So he's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't be suspicious. I trust me, the baby's here. I just have to meet this dude called the Fox. She's like, the Fox? Who is the Fox? And he's like, he's the alleged leader of the kidnappers. And she's like, oh, the Fox. He's like, yeah. So the Fox, though, he's real smart. I've been having playing a chess match with him. She's like, okay. So she's like, you know, I'm starting to be a little suspicious, Gaston. He's like, no, look, trust me. It's the Fox. And she's like, okay. Now, how long do you think her patience could last?
With this gal, I don't know, man. Like mine would be long over. 4 more months.
No. She reaches the end of her rope and she's like, Gaston, my money or I'm going to the cops.
Oh.
So what do you think he says?
I have no idea.
I have some paperwork to prove to you. I'll be right back and I'll go get that. And then that'll tell you what happened to your money.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, after a quick break, I'll be right back with some paperwork to tell you the end of this story.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So they're down in El Paso when Evelyn McLean starts to get like more than suspicious of Gaston Means. His stories are no longer holding. The Fox bit is no longer working. She's like, I'm out of here. She goes back to Washington, D.C. She goes right to the Department of Justice. She goes, give me J. Edgar Hoover. I've got a story for him, right? And then so J. Edgar Hoover's like, what's the deal? He's like, Gaston Means, that old so-and-so. And so then they put out an arrest warrant for Gaston Means. And, you know, it's now official. She's been robbed by this notorious con man because J. Edgar Hoover's like, oh, I can tell you some stories about Gaston Means.
Well, yeah.
So the FBI starts hunting down Gaston Means. Now, meanwhile, they're still looking for the Lindbergh baby. The FBI is like beating all the bushes trying to find the Lindbergh baby, and now they got to divide their their resources and try to find Gaston Means. Luckily, it doesn't take them long. They find him. He's in Washington, D.C., spotted in a high-powered car driven by a chauffeur. The FBI agents chase after his car, and they manage to cut him off on a city street. He's grabbed, arrested, and charged with embezzlement and bribery. The FBI agents demand to know, where is Evelyn McLean's money? He's like, you know what? I got a story about that.
Let me get the paperwork.
I'll be right back.
I'll be right back.
So he's like, look, okay, now this is the story according to Gaston Means, but told by Evelyn McLean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, and I quote, Means said he went to Concord, North Carolina, got the money, and on the way back was stopped in Alexandria, Virginia, by a mysterious stranger who whispered to him, 11. Now, Means had been conducting himself in storybook detective fashion. He had assigned numbers to all the principals in the case, and 11 was Mrs. McLean's secret designation. So when the stranger whispered 11 to him, Means was quoted, I thought I was being approached by someone directly representing Mrs. McLean, so I gave him the $100,000.
So he claims that someone came up and whispered 11.
His secret code word, because he had assigned numbers to everybody, and so they just happened to whisper 11. He's like, this must be the one.
And anyone believes him anymore? I mean,
No. He's arrested.
By the way, that you know what's interesting about that town in North Carolina? Huh. They pronounce it Concord.
Oh, really?
And out here we say Concord.
Like Concord and like Lexington and Concord. Yeah, okay.
This is Concord.
Okay, Concord. I'm sorry, North Carolina.
Fun. Yeah.
So Gassy Means gets arrested for embezzlement, robbery, and he gets convicted and sentenced 15 years in prison.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yep. Okay.
But you can't con one of the richest people in the world. They have powerful friends.
So convicted, sentenced.
Money never shows up.
That's my question.
Money never shows back up. He's got this like Confederate. He was helping him. People think that person has the money. Money disappears. 6 years later, still behind bars, Gassy Means dies, takes the secret to the grave with him.
Oh.
Yep.
How old was he?
58.
Same as Harding.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
Well, yeah. Both of them beat the life expectancy.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, when he was in prison, he became friends with Al Capone. Remember I mentioned that up top?
Yeah.
So he spent time in Alcatraz. Now, he may have told Al Capone about the story behind 11 and all that, but other than that, he didn't tell anybody. And Al Capone, you know, I doubt he told Al Capone. I just like saying his name a lot.
Let's say invented detail. Yeah, he told Al Capone. Those two, they told each other things.
They're Gabby buddies.
They told each other things they'd never told
anyone
else.
Their most private secrets.
Yeah.
Their intimate fears.
Mm-hmm.
And so the New York Times, when they get an obituary at Gassy Means, they wrote, Means offered no deathbed statement. He had met earlier attempts of G-men to obtain here the inside story of the case with stony silence.
So that's when he doesn't have anything to say about it.
Oh, yeah, to anybody.
Because he can't go somewhere and say,
there's no paperwork for him to grab.
I'll be right back.
He's like, look, are you going to let me out of prison? Then I ain't telling you nothing. Now, there's one last mystery to this story.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the Lindbergh baby?
I know it wasn't good.
Yeah. So basically, for years, and I'm talking like well into the 70s, young men would come forward. I guess by the 70s, it was no longer young men. But men would come forward and be like, oh, I am the Lindbergh baby. They kidnapped me and left me, and I was raised in this farm, and finally I'm free. Can I have my dad's money? And they're like, no, bro. But the truth is, there's no happy ending to this story. The Lindbergh baby was not surviving the ordeal.
That's
now,
sad.
Evelyn McLean, she told reporters the sad fate and also how she felt about being conned by Gassy Means.
Yeah, think about it. It's like she suffers that loss and then she gets conned and then is so invested in the Lindbergh case and then has to go through that tragedy and trauma again.
Yeah, she basically reopens herself up to the same trauma and has the same result.
Yeah.
And even her money can't do anything for her both times.
I think, I was poking fun at her, but I think we'd all be dingy if we'd gone through some of that stuff.
I think anyway, she's dingy before, but yeah. I agree. No, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah. What did she have to say about that?
Well, here's what Evelyn McLean told the reporters. Quote, I had lived more than a score of years haunted daily by the fear of just what was happening to the Lindberghs. I tried to do what millions wished they might. In my case, the wish was harnessed to my money. I'm sorry that I failed, that I was tricked, but I shall always be glad that in my heart I was compelled to take part in the effort to ransom the Lindbergh baby. So she at least got to feel honorable in her failure.
Yeah, true.
So it's not the happiest note to end on, but it is definitely the end of the story of Gaston Means.
Yeah.
So what is your ridiculous takeaway from my man Gaston?
Well, I think he's not a good dude, but I do like his whole, I'll be right back, look at this paperwork thing. People's eyes glaze over with paperwork. And if you can paper them with phony paperwork and then meantime be like, look over there and then make a run for it, I'll be right back.
Yeah, I'll be right back.
That's pretty clever. He got really far being stupidly clever.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I dare I say ridiculous.
Dare away.
What about you?
My ridiculous takeaway is never trust the police.
Well, that's always a...
No, I'm just kidding. But basically, you got to question anybody. Just because they're authority doesn't mean that, you know, you got to listen to them. Gaston Means is proof positive of that.
Yeah, true.
Well, thanks for joining us. I'm Elizabeth Dutton.
I am Zarin Burnett.
You can find us online at Ridiculous Crime on both Twitter and Instagram. If you got a tip for us about a ridiculous crime you'd like to hear about, one you want to confess to, or one that you know about from your family stories, let us know. Give us a jingle, a ring, or email us at ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. That's all for this week, folks. We'll be back next week with a new story.
Or in a couple days.
Depends on how you do
Whenever.
It. Whenever.
Yeah. It's loose. It's free.
Or you can just, click on us to do another story right now.
Click it up.
So Ridiculous Crimes is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by Chief Inspector Dave Kustin. Research is by Special Agent Marissa Brown. The theme song is by Thomas, the California Fox, Lee, and Travis, Call Me 11. Dutton. Executive producers are Ben, That's a Big Diamond, Bolin, and Noel, Meet Me in El Paso Brown.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.